CliffCentral.com.
I don't want you to leave. Will you hold my hand?
Oh, yes, Sam Smith.
Oh, won't you stay with me? 'Cause you're all I need.
April 2019, that's when Sam is coming into the country.
So, you know, Sam seems like a nice, straightforward guy. Just wants his hand held to stay with him. There's nothing convoluted or there's no bitch gotta have my money or I'm gonna slap that hoe's ass. Like, he just wants a bit of love and tenderness.
No, it depends, you know. Depends on the day. Sometimes you also need to tell a bitch that you want back your money.
See, you know, I feel about rap culture. I think it's very derogatory towards women and I don't think it's very nice. Sam Smith, though, now this is a guy you can trust.
Look, I'm no Dr. Phil in this matter, but...
See,
you're in a relationship.
He just screams commitment. I mean, this is what you want in life, see? We had a damning stat this week about 62% of kids in this country have no father. And then you got a guy like Sam Smith.
Steve Smith.
Oh, look at that. I mean, my day is made. Right there.
All I'm saying is...
So let me guess, he's coming to Cape Town and Johannesburg. Of course, no one goes to Devon because it's a waste of time.
I don't know about Durban just yet, well, but yeah.
Put it this way, Sam, if you're listening, don't go to Durban because nobody will come.
Oh.
And you can say, stay with me, and all seven people in the audience will go, kind of got plans later.
Why is everyone saying that about my hometown?
Because it's true. No one goes to stuff in Durban. We've had this conversation over and over and over. There's more chance of pulling a crowd in East London.
Well, okay. Moral of the story is, I think everyone should be saving up for Sam Smith tickets.
When is it, Sia? When is it?
April 2019.
But far away.
This is ample time to warn you. Take your significant other, take your boo.
So yeah, let's pick this up again next year, Feb.
Next year, Feb, we'll be busy. We'll be watching The Bachelor South Africa.
Oh, when does that start?
Oh, Ben, don't you catch my cues. Next year, Feb.
February again?
Mm.
Gosh.
On Valentine's Day.
I don't know, Sia, there's like a big wait, huh? I mean, we're not even the ninth month yet, and you're dropping all these things we're going to look forward to. You know, we live in the world of instant gratification. I'm going to have to watch ASMR for like 8 months now.
Internet or instant gratification, which one?
Both.
Okay. If you are wondering what is exactly going on with Ben and I, just going on our own accord, Gareth isn't on the show this morning.
He's not. Gosh, I thought he's been a bit quiet. Where is he?
You are such a pleasant person to deal with, Benjamin Kopinski.
Duly noted, and I'll always be that person to you, Sia.
Thank you. Well, it is a Thursday, and so we do have our Thursday regulars. In a couple of minutes, we'll be chatting to ENCA reporter Michael Apple around what is happening with the state capture inquiry. If you're like me, then you are fascinated by the entire process, but you have 40,000 things that you need to know more about with this entire thing. So,
before we get there, we've actually been quite slack on listener emails.
Oh.
Do you mind if we just fit one in quickly?
Okay, sure.
Okay, firstly, on the listener emails, we love them all. We all read them because it's nice.
Bus coming.
It's nice, and obviously we've got massive self-esteem issues here. So if you send it to us, we have to read them. And we read them, and we scan for our names, and we go, yes, we're in here. But no, if you want it to be read on the air, as in right now, I've got to say, if you can keep it relatively short, because I know we've all got great stories. But when I've got to keep scrolling on the mouse, I'm thinking, sheepers, if this doesn't go well, then suddenly I'm going to just reading dead air. So try to keep it relatively short, and then, everything will be okay. So here's a message. It says, hey, Gareth, and the most A++ team ever. Ready, see ya?
Not just
A++.
But A++.
I listen to your podcast every day. I work and have been working as a chef on a yacht. See, have we had this one already?
I don't know, read on. I don't understand mumble, Ben. You need to use your words.
I feel like we've had this email.
It's an audio medium.
I feel like we've had this email already. So I spend a lot of time chopping onions and peeling potatoes. No, see, we've had this. I mean, come on.
Okay, then there are other emails to read.
And here I was saying that you've got to keep it short, and I'm reading the same email twice. No, I've ruined it now. That's it. The listening email section is now crashed and burned. Tabo says, Benito, this track takes me back to FIFA 08. Wow. Was that some very romantic music for FIFA 08, huh?
Secondly, is that your new nickname that I didn't know about? Benito.
Yeah, sure.
Well, okay, just roll with it and that's it. Before we also head off to the burning platform, I just wanted to, since we are just shining a spotlight on political news, let's start off with the latest from someone who we actually haven't spoken about in a long time, Bathabile Dlamini. Well, the Constitutional Court is expected to rule today on whether the former Social Development Minister, Bathabile Dlamini, should be held personally liable for legal costs incurred in the social grants debacle. I mean, I'm raising my eyebrow just in this moment. Yes, this is after.
Yes, and yes.
So make do we even need a day in court, really? Because I think we can all together admit and agree on something.
Make South Africans accountable again.
Well, this is after the court ordered in March last year that Bathabile Dlamini should explain why she should not personally pay the legal costs of the social grants case. Justice Johan Voorman also made another order 3 months later that further investigation be conducted into why Dlamini could be held personally liable. Like, why are we exactly having this conversation? The dark cloud hanging over Dlamini's head dates back to 2014. This is when the court ruled that the contract, the SA Social Security Agency, which is SASA, had signed with social grants distributor Cash Paymaster Services 2 years prior, was illegal and invalid. So the court then suspended the order of invalidity. What? Invalidity? Yes. Until March 31st, 2018, to allow the Social Development Department and SASA time to find a new provider, which it found in the South African Post Office. We know how that's turned out. But regardless, the court also ordered that CPS continue paying social grants for 12 months from April 1st. So let's keep an eye out on that today.
But someone, I mean, we've spoken about this again at length. So Marikana, Life Isidimeni, this grant fiasco, no one to this day has been accountable, punished, made an example of any of these different things. So what happens? There'll be another thing coming up because no one is ever prosecuted. They can't even pay their own legal fees.
Look, accountability.
I mean, and this is a woman. She went in there. I mean, she looks like she's got a puzzle face most days, but she looked like she was just swaying at the jaw in front of the court that day. I mean, she's like, and they're asking questions. She was like, bleh, 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 bleh.
Accountability really is just the buzzword and the trending topic that I feel is a connotation when it comes to South Africa and a lot of our politics. I know a lot of people don't really like watching, for example, Carte Blanche because they feel like it depresses them. But I watch Carte Blanche.
Da, da.
Yes, that one. I watched Carte Blanche this past Sunday as they were actually celebrating 30 years of the show. So it was their 30th birthday anniversary. And as they were looking back on some of their big major stories that they've covered and reported on, I really just saw this thread of accountability of people who do these shady things and they are let off so easily and they're let off the hook. And you wonder, how do we let this happen time and time again?
Yep, indeed. Well, it's time for the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's. So we've got a new, what should we call our contributors?
Correspondent.
Yeah, but we've got to use the flame and the grills and the heat. Turning up the heat on today's political and current affairs is Mike Apple from ENCA. Mike, how are you doing?
Morning. Good new guys.
Yeah, fantastic. Lovely crisp Skype connections here. This is off to a really good start. Mike, thanks for joining us today. Of course, the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's each week does put a rather big spotlight onto all the big issues of today. And of course, state capture inquiry, Mike, is the big thing right now. I reckon we should start with that. Like we said in the last hour, we haven't really covered too much because we haven't had a lot of things we can just really grab onto. What's been your take initially with this?
Well, you've got Fakie Mentor, who is well known for her Facebook rants and giving a lot of unnecessary detail about the inside of the Gupta mansion in Sachsenwald, gold-plated mirrors, etc., etc. But I mean, commissions of inquiry are supposed to be fact-finding missions. So what has come out that we don't know? And that is the fact that even BC Jonas's evidence that he's given is that the Guptas were able to siphon 6 billion rand from state-owned entities, and they wanted his help as finance minister to increase that to 8 billion. That's something we didn't know. Mm. Just wrap your head around that. A single family, 8 billion rand is what they wanted. We heard from the government communications, former CEO of government communications, Thembo Maseko, yesterday, that through the New Age newspaper, they wanted 600 million rand, which was the entire budget of the GCIS on media spend in terms of advertising, that they wanted that 600 million, which is coincidentally also the same amount that they offered Jonas if he was to take the job of finance minister. Those are some of the interesting things that have crept up. And of course, the fact that the Hawks are not showering themselves in glory at all. I suspect they're going to have to announce another commission of inquiry to look into the Hawks.
Mike, I really want to focus for a second on what Thembo Maseko has been saying, because he kind of took the spotlight by, in my opinion, just being this woe unto me character. He went on to explain how the Guptas have threatened him and have bullied him as well. Is this believable? Is this even necessary on such a platform?
Look, I can tell you my experience in dealing with Thembo Maseko. He's my boss, by the way. When I worked in government, he was my boss. I worked in government communications. I know him to be a very straightforward, honorable man. I would, on the face of it, believe what he is saying. There's no reason for him to lie about this sort of stuff. And you see a general trend developing, the way in which the Guptas sort of bulldoze their way through and believe, I mean, summoning government, senior government officials to their mansion. There's a pattern that develops here. They do believe that they're acting with some sense of power when they summon senior government officials to their homes, which is something the Deputy Chief Justice picked up on, saying, geez, normally you would kind of go and see a senior government official at the department. It was not normal to, surely it's not normal to be summoned to a house, but that's what happened.
Exactly. And, I mean, Mike, I mean, as a private citizen, you can't even really summon a ward councillor to your area if you've got like a leaky pipe or something.
If you can find out who your ward councillor is, that's right. So, I mean, it makes no sense. But of course, he said that these were before the days of the infamous Saxonwold Shebeen, courtesy of Brian Malefe. So he wasn't really sure. But also something I've picked up on, people get into cars and travel to locations without knowing who the drivers are and who the people are that invited them. That is really something that's strange to me. We have a very trusting society, it seems.
That is crazy. I mean, that's like something out of Narcos. It's like you will get into this car and you will then meet Mr. X or whatever. But just to go back again, like the actual... I gotta say, maybe the balls of this. So they weren't content with 6 billion. They really wanted to up the game to 8. So this whole state capture thing, like we were saying in the first hour, you know, when it's this level of crime, this isn't just a kind of like a steal here and there. This was well orchestrated. But like, do you feel like we're really gonna understand how deep this all ran if someone like a fakie mentor doesn't actually have the facts and the figures?
Yeah, look, we have to remember fakie mentor, even if 80%, or let's say 50% of what she says is true, it is still incredibly alarming. Yeah. And because she is unable to remember certain dates and people and names and identifying the Guptas by their obesity, maybe the difference between them by their obesity, I mean, it's quite ludicrous. But even if, as I say, even if 50% of what she says is correct, we have some serious problems in this country. But that we know.
Yeah.
And this commission of inquiry is supposed to unearth what we don't know. And are we, and this is something that I looked at as a journalist in one of the programs I put together, is are we as taxpayers going to get value for money from these commissions of inquiry? This one alone for the first 6 months will cost us 230 million. And it's set to go on for 2 years. So if you extrapolate that, it's 920 million rand. And are we going to indeed then be any closer to the truth?
Well, it's not like the Guptas are sitting on that 6 billion which they can pay back at any different stage. Now, Mike, you say 2 years. I mean, has there been like a sort of like a fixture list pulled up here, or is it just like a very loose kind of agenda? How are we going to get to 2 years?
So initially it was set down for 6 months, and then I think the Deputy Chief Justice looked at what they have to go over, what they have to comb through. The fact that the longer and the more people who testify, the more people get implicated, and we're talking the highest echelons of government here. The president, current and former, there was a call yesterday by John Steenhuisen, the chief whip of the DA, saying, bring Zuma, bring Ramaphosa, put them in the hot seat, make them testify under oath, because a lot of what happened here, it didn't happen in a vacuum. There were people that had information that were sharing it with the Guptas, Gwede Mantashe, J.C. Duarte, you have all these big names that, and you have the executive ethics code, which, you mean, it looks great on paper, but can anybody actually be taken to task for what was going on? So Justice Zondo, I think, saw what they have to get through, and if they meaningfully want to make sure that there is some outcome from this commission of inquiry. Of course, it's just going to be recommendations, which the president, who could, by all accounts, be himself an implicated party, but we'll see as the evidence comes forward. But then he can look at those recommendations and go, yeah, thanks a lot, but no thanks.
Oh, wow, okay. But it's kind of damning. Well, it's actually really, I get despondent thinking about this, because there's a lot of people who are complicit with all of this. And if they didn't know about it, then they're particularly bad at their jobs. So it's kind of like a lose-lose here for all the current political people. But like you say, it's, you know, are we going to get bang for the buck? In your mind, what is the best outcome if we do have a constructive, let's just call it, two-year period?
Look, the only thing that this commission of inquiry is going to achieve is a recommendation that there hopefully be criminal prosecution of a whole range of people. Some we know and some we suspect, and it's potentially some we don't suspect or didn't suspect that need to be criminally prosecuted. And the role of the hawks, the accusation being made that they actively undermined the statements by Fakie Mentor, by Themba Maseko, by Jonas, trying to kill the cases before they could even start. That, to me, is one of the most worrying things that's come up. The fact that you have an elite, and I'm making some serious air quotes here, the elite crime-fighting unit that is actively working, it would appear, with the Guptas and with their political cronies to kill cases before it can get out into the court of public opinion. I mean, that is just worrying on a whole different level.
It's also the very definition of state capture, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
As a South African citizen, I want to trust the process. I want to believe in the process, and I am. But I also have to admit, it is a bit stressful to see what is coming out and to see how all of this is playing out. When, for me, I paused a bit when Fakie Mentor basically said that the hawks had given her corrupted version of her handwritten statement after she opened a case against our former president, accusing him of a corrupt relationship with the Guptas. Mike, do you think we're just going to see a ripple effect of many other people who just have had a hand in some sort of guilty underwork?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's becoming clearer that this was not, you know, just isolated people being summoned to the Saxonwold mansion. I think there's a lot more to this. But, you know, the media has been digging at this for many years now, and the issue of state capture certainly isn't new, but the role players, I think who the key role players are and how they managed to pull off, well, what we know, a 6 billion rand heist of taxpayer money that they hope to increase to 8 billion. But, I mean, how they managed to pull this off with such with such sort of immunity from consequence is the scariest thing for me. So who the role players are, how they manage to do it, and a lot of people, the yes men or the yes women within the government who rubber stamped the decisions. Thembo Maseko is one who stood up and said, no, I'm not going to be giving over the 600 million rand budget to you guys. And they told him, you will be dealt with. And what did the Hawks do when he reported this matter to them? They, before he was going to testify at this commission, yesterday he said that he has now been asked for a statement because he's being investigated for a 2005 tender, an IT tender, when he was the DG of Public Works. So it's interesting how Faki Mentor was investigated for a trip to China when she was at Transnet. At the cost of Transnet, because she was testifying. You have Thembo Maseko, who's now being investigated for something that happened 13 years ago. I'm not saying don't investigate the guy, but the timing, just look at the timing. That's important.
It seems so petty as well. They're going to try to find whatever dirt they can.
Yeah.
But now,
yeah, that's right.
Is there any chance that we're going to see a Gupta of any state of obesity taking on this inquiry? I mean, I right now, as a South African, we'll take an underweight Gupta. That's how desperate we are to have some sort of justice.
Are we going to see the Guptas appear at the State Commission, at this Commission of Inquiry? You know, I'm willing to put a fiver on it. No, I don't think so. These guys pay legal teams hundreds of millions to make their problems go away or at least speak on their behalf. You haven't been able to get a Gupta in Parliament, which is supposed to be the highest sort of decision-making body and body of accountability in this country for everything from the SABC to Transnet to everything. So are we going to see them at a Commission of Inquiry, which, yes, has subpoena powers, but so does Parliament? I just don't think so. The legal teams will be there, and they pay these guys top dollar to make this sort of thing go away. And I can promise you, Mike Helens does not come cheap, and they'll get value for money because the guy, I think, is going to be an absolute pit bull on the stand when he cross-examines some of these people, if the Chief Justice or Deputy Chief Justice rules that you can cross-examine those who have given evidence. And I think Mike Helens is going to destroy somebody like a Faki Mentor, who we've seen hasn't exactly got all the facts straight a lot of the time. So they're just going to use these high-powered legal teams to kind of bulldoze their way through this. But are we going to see a Gupta on our stoop anytime soon? I don't think so.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I don't know. But so key learning here, Guptas do the summoning. They don't get summoned. Okay, I'm just trying to tick off certain points.
Which still here, so just shows their power.
Yeah, okay. Now, obviously, Mike, the Guptas and the whole state capture thing, these words go hand in hand. But, of course, there's a Russian element to this whole thing as well, because there were big talks of all this nuclear and that's kind of part of state capture, isn't it? This whole sort of nefarious dealings with the Russians.
So it seems that in some dark room there was a lot of vodka shared, and it was decided that we need a new nuclear deal. And this is basically, it seems, what was at stake for Jacob Zuma. That is why he almost tried to push it through right near the end of his presidency, promising that, you know, nuclear is going to be the solution to everything. And, I mean, it's completely unaffordable for South Africa, for the taxpayer, completely unaffordable.
Yeah, sure.
And it seems that Jonas was going to be, Nhlanhla Nene refused to sign off on it. Therefore, he was axed. That is now, it seems that is the way that things unfolded, that Jonas was told, listen, come in, help us with this nuclear deal. And also, as an aside, help us push our revenue from government up to 8 billion. There is no such thing as coincidence that you have key individuals like David Mahlobo, the rhino poaching guy implicated in that Al Jazeera documentary, that you have guys like this that are traveling to Russia on private jets. Nobody really knows what on earth they're doing there. So the nuclear deal was a key component of delivering, and you can imagine from a $1 trillion deal, how much was promised to Jacob Zuma and his cronies and the Guptas, who happened to, before this whole nuclear deal even came up, just decided for some odd reason to buy a uranium mine at a time when nobody is buying uranium.
Interesting.
And Mike, look, please pardon me where I'm wrong or if I'm getting overly dramatic here. And I'm not trying to create any conspiracies out there. But what do you make of something like the Justice Zondo asking the legal team to look into Fakey Mentor's safety? You know, like, are we going to see, do you think we're going to see slick, nasty moves like this? Do you think there's some people who are just unhappy about the inquiry, obviously, and will they make some below-the-belt moves?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult one to answer. I heard her mentioning the fact that that's when she actually started crying. She started crying because she fears for her safety. I don't think it's such a stretch of the imagination that there could be underhanded sort of moves that play out here. Remember, the stakes are incredibly high. People should, for all accounts, they should be going to jail for this stuff. So, Fakey Mentor a target? She certainly believes so. We've seen interviews with whistleblowers in the past. Thembo Maseko himself, just cast your mind back to Makosi Khoza when she did that interview on Carte Blanche, saying that people would make phone calls to say, you know, we know your daughter goes to this school.
Right.
We're watching you right now. I mean, this is real stuff. There's a serious consequence to blowing the whistle in this country. And I'm actually looking into whether or not we sufficiently protect whistleblowers in this country. It on the face of it, it doesn't appear so. And I don't think it's a stretch of the imagination when the stakes are this high and hopefully people go to prison that some underhanded tactics may be used. Yeah.
Well, we saw with the SABC as well. I mean, yeah, this isn't exactly going to be a shot out of the dark here.
Yeah.
People with a lot at stake, as you say, Mike, will do all kinds of different things. We don't have too much more time with you. We need to get cracking. But Department of Public Works, now this is a story that, again, this is what I find fascinating about this country, is that you can get away with so much because there's always something bigger somewhere else. So we're all eyes on state capture inquiry. But there's all kinds of other things happening around the corner. So Department of Public Works spent almost $500,000 around on Bri areas. What's happening with this story?
Yeah, geez, it doesn't rain, but it pours. We have money to spend and money to waste in this country. The fact that SCOPA, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, has found that they're spending R500,000 on ministerial sort of bribe areas, that's got to be one hell of a bribe, I tell you. And the fact that I also noticed there that ministers are living in houses that are valued at R9 million. These are people of the people, by the people, for the people. That nonsense. I mean, it is absolutely shocking that in a country with the sort of social ills that we have people that are public representatives that are living in R9 million houses. So all of a sudden, Public Works has woken up to the fact that, oh, there's been a bit of wastage on ministers. Are we getting bang for buck? Certainly not. I mean, as I say, it's going to be one hell of a bra you're having for R500,000.
Well, especially when you've got, again, we go back to certain stories that don't seem to go away because they're just so severe. The whole pit toilet situation. And we've got R500,000 bribe places and R9 million houses for people who are meant to have the people's interests in mind. Like, you are so removed from everyday South Africans if your house is R9 million. You are so removed from everyday South Africans if your house is R4 million, R3 million.
Yeah, I mean, it beggars belief, the sort of money that we throw at public representatives. These are people that are... But look, we're supposed to be championing causes like, as you say, eradicating the bucket system, getting people out of RDP houses. We shouldn't be building more RDP houses. And then we have this sort of extravagance. I mean, it just beggars belief, the sort of money that we waste. I mean, the Auditor General's report says 51.1 billion rand was lost to irregular and fruitless expenditure. Last year, I think it was. 50 billion rand. I mean, this country could be so much further if we actually spent money on the things we're supposed to and made good on those sort of promises that the government makes on a daily basis.
Wow, and these numbers are sobering. I mean, I know it's first thing in the morning, but you hear numbers like that, and you get kind of shaken to your core here. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today on the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. Really nice, concise information around the state capture inquiry. So, yeah, we're definitely going to get Mike on again soon, because we need to keep tabs on this.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mike.
Much appreciated, guys. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks so much. That was Mike Apple. Yeah, he was good. So, yeah. I'm making mental notes here. I think we can have him again.
There we go.
But how about those numbers, Ham? Just imagine you found a way of swindling 6 billion out of a country, but you kind of want 8. These people need to be publicly flogged, as in pulled out from wherever. Again, like you hear these heartbreaking stories, and you know, obviously they're easy go-tos for us as references.
Yeah.
But you've got children who can't go to the toilet in this country, and you've got a family that's come in and has taken 6 billion rand of our money. And you've got politicians who just sit there and go, yeah, well, my bread's buttered. So, yeah.
This inquiry is really turning out to be, in my opinion, a watershed moment for the country. Whether we like it or not, to now have people, and as we were talking earlier about accountability and, yes, we haven't, or we aren't seeing the proper actions of accountability being taken just yet. But the mere fact that we're here at this point, these people are now having to speak out and they have to confess what they know, and we're hearing these stories. I really do believe that this is a watershed moment. How the heck?
Yeah, I would love to be on your boat, but this is watershed down. It's purely a recommendation at the end. Even when they find all this kind of stuff, Cyril's still going to go, yeah, look, we've actually, let's rather focus on the whites. Let's rather focus on land. Let's not talk about state capture for now. This could be the most damning inquiry ever. We could have smoking guns.
There's so much at stake.
Fat Gupta's the whole deal, and the recommendation can be treated like Tuli Monacella's recommendations against Jacob Zuma. Because that's what they are, recommendations. And these fat bastard politicians will get up there, and they will quickly say, ah, yes, but it was a recommendation.
And I know there's, you know, Mike was talking about the responsibility of being a whistleblower in this country. But at the same time, I don't really feel much for anyone who's there like faking mental, starting to cry and. I'm not necessarily saying it's crocodile tears, but I'm just saying you were in this process, you heard certain things, you did certain things, you saw certain things, and this is now the moment where you have to face them. So when you now cry to the judge or the justice and you say you feel like that your hotel room door has been tampered with and you feel for your safety, well, isn't that funny how the world works?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you how the world works.
Not sympathy per se, but
I'll tell you how the show works, Cassie Tubbs. Now, we've given you guys airtime in the past. We see you as friends of the show. But if you ever send through a giant dong pic like you just put on the screen right now, poor Sia is trying to conduct an interview here with a reputable political analyst, and you've got giant dick pics on our screen. That's the over for us.
Can we just have a moment of silence for the show? Okay, it needs a bit of context.
I mean, this poor guy, I mean, I spoke earlier about this system not working. Anyway, our screen's back with a vengeance. So Cassie Tops is now sending us pictures. We know
you're not just pictures.
Look, we know you're in the sex business, but having... keep it together. You guys are meant to be professionals too. You just sent us a plethora of sex images. And poor Sia over here, I'm looking at him. He's looking at the screen. The screen's to my right. Sia's in front of me. And the poor guy, I mean, ultimate professionals are keeping it together during the interview because these giant dong pictures just come around our screen.
This is when I question my life. I'm thinking, how is this my life? Here I am trying to, you know, be above board, be professional, and people are sending us penis pictures.
I'm sorry on your behalf.
Day in the life of hosts at Cliff Central. Anyway.
May I just say, Mfundo, thank you for sending through your tweets, because thankfully then the feed refreshed and we have to see all these giant, I mean, like, but giant dong pics. And you guys have got your work cut out for you. But keep it to yourselves in that element there. I mean, we've promoted your business. We don't need to see 12 inches and it's 7:39 in the morning.
We don't even need to discuss this further. I'm over this.
Just going to throw it out there.
What does it mean to be a man in today's world? Well, there is a lot of confusion about this and a lot of anger directed at men. Well, this is a conversation about masculinity everyone needs to hear. In this raw and authentic series of 6 podcasts, Craig Wilkinson and Khalil Osiris start from the premise that true masculinity is a great gift to the world, equally relevant to men and women. This podcast series provides profound insights into why men behave the way they do. It unpacks the 3 core desires at the heart of every man, the question every boy needs answered on his journey to manhood, the 4 big lies about masculinity, what wounds the masculine heart, and the one thing every man wants from women. More than sex. Well, Man to Man Talks is brought to you by Carling Black Label. Drink responsibly and, you know, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. This podcast series is available now on the cliffcentral.com website. I have to admit, I have been giving this Man to Man podcast series a listen to, and if you haven't gotten into it just yet, please do. I would absolutely implore you to do that. I was listening to Craig and Khalil just have this conversation around how men, just by being affected by one thing, and I guess you can stretch it as well and say women as well, but I think in society, because of how men are just told to behave, or they're told, you know, men don't cry or men don't show emotion. Craig retold a story of one of his friends who has committed suicide because he was struggling at work and things. He just felt like he wasn't successful, and more so because a man is meant to be the head of the household and support and hold his family up together. He felt like he was burdening his family, and in committing suicide, it's a chilling story when you hear Craig retell it. In committing suicide, he left a note to his kids saying, "I am covered by his life cover, and his life cover will still pay out even though he commits suicide." So he felt like he was actually worth more to his family dead rather than alive. Wow.
Just talk about a real life story, him.
I mean, like that. I was actually listening while I was working, and I stopped working, and I like let that sink in for a second. For a father to say that, and basically, also he didn't understand his role then of a father to know that, you know, sometimes all you need is for a father to be there. All you need is a father to call you and find out how you're doing, or father to be there at home when you get back from school. But who knows how these kids will now move on from this and how they'll live their lives. But this just speaks to the core of the type of conversation that takes place on the Man to Man podcast series. So please, please, please give that a listen. It's called Man to Man, hosted by Craig Wilkinson and Khalil Osiris. And you can find all of those podcasts on cliffcentral.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So gather my thoughts. In France. So Brittany is north of France, right?
Excuse me?
Brittany. North of France. So where France is, mm-hmm. top of it, there's a coastline, Brittany.
Wait, is there a place called Brittany?
Brittany in France, yeah. So it's...
How do you spell that? No, I did not know this.
B-R-I-T-T-A-N-Y, Brittany. So when you're at the top of France... Why am I repeating...
Okay, carry
North
on.
France, Brittany.
I swear, I did take geography at school. There is a beach. I'm not really well versed, because at first I thought you were mispronouncing Britain, and then secondly I thought, are you making a Britney Spears reference? But sure, I've now learned a new thing. There's a place called Brittany in France.
Swimmers here have been told to stay away from the beaches and go into the water because there is a dolphin on the loose.
Is this
Zafar? Zafar is randier than the Cussy Tops right now.
Is this the horny dolphin?
Yes, it's the horny dolphin. So far, he is so sexually, just yachts at the moment, as they say in Afrikaans, that he is literally he's a threat to anybody. And I'm not just saying people. Boats, kayaks, the whole deal.
No.
Zafar is no small dolphin. Pretty big adult dolphin, okay? But I mean, we all know dolphins are quite rapey. I mean, that's just the whole thing. You didn't see Noah coming anywhere close to trying to put them on the ark because they would have just been terrible, terrible
or
company.
Or because they wouldn't have survived on the ark because there's no water.
Still this, yeah. He wants to...
Okay, sure. Let's go with that.
So scientists and everyone are basically rallying together to see what they can do about this dolphin, but he is so sexually frustrated right now. And dolphins have been known to murder. So, again, like very rapey, very... very irrational creatures. So you can't swim in this beach, and he's preying on anything he can. So, like, it's the strangest thing because boats are going by and they're feeling like, what the hell's going on here? This dolphin is dry humping their boat.
No.
Seriously. Seriously. It's a story. Many people say he's doing it on purpose.
You can have that moment one more time. People think they're what?
On purpose.
You can't even say it with a straight face. Okay.
No, but I mean, it's just these dolphins out of hand. So if you are in Brittany, north part of France there, try to swim because there are these rapey dolphins going around. And maybe it's just a seasonal thing.
Mm.
Whoever's going to solve this, I mean, I don't know if they're going to create a contraption that's going to make it happen for him. Whatever it is, just to watch out. Watch out.
Well, look, I don't want to be... penned or as someone who's spreading fake news, but don't all dolphins also form like circles around you, like some humans, and that's where they could do rape or something?
That's correct, yeah. That is correct. Mm. Basically, try to stay away from dolphins if you can.
Okay.
I know they're cute and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, just stay away from them. They've got the ill-meaning agendas in life.
Oh, alrighty then. Well, if we are sticking to slightly bizarre news, then... I'm trying to tell this with absolute respect, but this is just funny to me and slightly admirable, I guess. Aretha Franklin, we know the world is still dealing with her passing, and one of the things that has been decided, I actually am not certain or clear as to whether she decided this herself while she was alive, that she wanted this to happen, or whether it was her family or her estate that decided this once that she had passed, but she is now being, her body is laid out in a public viewing. You know that, right, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so her body's placed in Detroit for fans or people who've admired her to walk up and to see her for one last time before she's buried in the ground. This is a story from yesterday. So technically yesterday was the second day her body was laid out. And so far people have spotted that Aretha Franklin, even in her death, is having several outfit changes.
Oh my gosh, that's... that's not even diva-ish, that's weird.
I know, for yesterday being her second day laid out, she rocked a fresh outfit of her public viewing. This is all happened on Wednesday. This time they say she opted for pastel blue frock and matching blue stilettos, but she still had on red lipstick and red nails, which went with the red dress that she originally wore on Tuesday. Isn't this just slightly weird? I don't know how I feel about this. This is after thousands of fans who've lined up outside the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History, where Aretha's body and her 24-carat gold-plated casket was wheeled into early in the morning. So, yeah. Dozens of others have set up shop, and some people are now selling memorabilia and t-shirts and pins and photographs as well of the 18-time Grammy winner's greatest hits. And the Swanson Funeral Home director O'Neill Swanson II said that Aretha Franklin will receive new outfits for another viewing today on Thursday, which will be at the New Bethel Church, and then she'll receive another outfit for her funeral on Friday. I just think this is weird. I just think it's so weird.
Well, look, unless it's written in her will, and it shouldn't have a will, right?
Yeah, they say she didn't have a will. Yeah.
Okay, so someone of the living right now is making the decision that she must have outfit changes. That is the weird part of the story here. If Aretha had a song which went, "When I die, I want to wear blah, 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 blah." Fair enough. Cool. Make it happen. But you are dressing a dead person, redressing and dressing and redressing and dressing a dead person.
Every single day. That's just her thing. I mean, just try to explain what she's saying in front of you right now.
She's wearing some pretty fucking awesome heels. I mean, I got to say. She ain't walking nowhere, but she's got some proper heels on.
That's it. So they're setting her body up for... So it's a 3-day public viewing. You know what? If this is what she wanted, then I get it. But I just think this is so odd.
This is exactly it. If there was consent from her side, then go ahead. Go ahead. But this just sounds like someone's making money here.
Yeah, and public viewings in general for me, just, I'm not comfortable with that. I mean, you're dead, you're gone. Can we please just remember
you as... Show her a little bit of respect. Just a little bit.
Did you have to go down that road?
Well, you were gawding again, so I mean, that's cut you short.
That's now a term. Well, anyway, yeah. I'm done with that then. Yeah.
So there's a South African guy who's about to die in Vietnam because he had like 1.5 kilogram of cocaine.
Ben, can you change your tone when you speak about things like that?
Well, I mean, this guy's rolled the dice in life, hasn't worked out, and now he's going to be killed.
Okay.
How about that, huh? 1.5 kilograms. Where was it stored? Because your mm-mm doesn't take that much.
Your mm-mm?
So basically, this guy, pretty brazen actually.
Yeah.
So he was arrested back in 2016 when he arrived in the Tan Son Nhat International Airport, and they found this much in his bag. He was just cruising with 1.5 kilograms of snuff in his bag.
Well, look, you reap what you sow.
So more news has come out that there was allegedly hired by a Nigerian man and was paid $3,500 to transport the 1.5 kilogram of cocaine.
No, it's far from smart.
If you look at $3,500, you go, yep, that's tidy, I'll do it. But then you go, ooh, actually, no, because if I get caught, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And, so if you've got more than 100, okay, this is where the story, if you think you can just take a little bit for your holidays, if you have 100 grams or more of heroin or cocaine, you're given the death sentence in Vietnam.
I mean, you know, like, when was it? Yesterday or the day before, we were talking about how there are probably about 800 South Africans across the world who are locked up for various things.
Yes, good point.
And I think we can argue and feel sympathy, for example, for an unmarried couple in Dubai who are holding hands and have had sex and are locked up because, according to the law there, unmarried people shouldn't be having sex.
Yeah.
That we can argue and feel sympathy for. If you are carrying drugs to a different country, regardless of where you're going, I'm sorry, I don't exactly, you know, my heart doesn't bleed for you in that instance.
Well, you can obviously see it's through desperation. You don't just suddenly meet a Nigerian man who wants to give you $3,500. Like, there's something that's gone wrong in this person's life, no doubt. And that's what they prey on. So when you're in the drug trafficking business, you get a lot of people who are addicts and a lot of people who are obviously like in a spot of bother. So they need this $3,500 to get by, otherwise that's the end of their life. So they're basically saying, if I die, I die. Either way, I'm kind of dead, so I wouldn't mind the money.
Oh, jeez. And when some people sadly opt for prison life being easier than being out and having to trade and smuggle drugs, I guess.
It's a world, thankfully, Sia, that you and I, and hopefully everyone that listens, doesn't know anything about.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it for today. Let's wrap it up. And I hate to end off on that slightly off note, but it is what it is.
Well, look, let's end on a positive note. Tomorrow's the last day of winter.
And tomorrow's Friday. I mean, what more do you want in your life? What are you considering?
So much. No, I actually got some work to do. Okay. I'm starting a new sort of video job campaign thingy. So I need to go and film a person doing certain things. But I shall reveal more as I get going.
So you can't talk about who this person is?
Well, yeah. I've actually got my first proper job doing video work. You know, because obviously I write and I talk.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm doing a full-on campaign. It's going to take 10 months of me charting the course of this person's life doing something rather interesting.
Is this someone high profile who we know?
No, just high profile on the scale at the moment, and hopefully lower profile after we're done with it.
I don't think your new boss wants to hear you say that.
I don't have bosses here. I have clients, and I like
your
them all.
Your new client.
That is, if it's today.
MSR.
That's if it's today.
Shut up. SSMR.
Okay, guys, we must stop the show right now before Alan Ford gets in here, because, you know, if he gets in here, that's just it.
Oh, wait. Before we wrap up, though, let's say this. You can win an entrepreneurial package worth 2 million rands with Alpha Code. We've been chatting about Alpha Code for the past couple of weeks, making you aware of this awesome, awesome competition they're running. Alpha Code is inviting applications for its prestigious Alpha Code Incubate program that seeks to identify and reward high-potential, innovative entrepreneurs to boost the development of fintech and financial services in South Africa. So here's the thing. 16 businesses will be invited to pitch for 8 places on the Alpha Code Incubate program, and the final 8 businesses will complete a customized 12-month program and will benefit from an entrepreneurial package worth 2 million rands each. The package consists of 1 million rands in grant funding and another 1 million rands worth of support, including mentorship, monthly expert-led sessions, exclusive office space in Sandton, marketing, legal, and other business support services. So the first round of applications, open your calendars, make a note of this, will close on the 7th of September 2018, and the program will begin on the 1st of November 2018. So time's running out. Do not waste any more.
Well, that's very good. Speaking of packages, Alan, hi. Oh.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, not so bad, huh?
Good. I just got, what do you mean speak of? I'm a package. I've just got back from Lebanon.
Yes.
Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday, yes, Alan Ford.
I was going to go straight to that. How was Lebanon?
Amazing. This is a land of incredible things.
Mm.
But really it is. I can't explain to you. The nightlife is insane. You see the most wonderful clubs, open air clubs. I mean, I've traveled the world, and I've from Vegas right through to Rio de Janeiro. I've been to some of the best places in Berlin and London.
Seen a lot of things.
But I've never seen nightlife like this in my life.
Well, like Beirut.
Beirut, yeah, and Journey.
It's a sexy place. It's on the Mediterranean.
It's just, so sexy.
Yeah.
It's so sexy. There's a place called Music Hall. It's packed and people are dancing, but each act comes on stage, and next thing there's an opera and people are going crazy. And next thing there's these best Lebanese dancers, and then the next act you've got hip hop dancers all the way from New York City and Harlem, and then these huge red curtains, velvet curtains close, and there's like dance music in between, and they've got about 20 acts, and it starts at 11 o'clock at night and it ends at 6 in the morning.
And so, this is what you did for your 12th birthday.
Yes, this is what I did for my 12th birthday.
So and is this what the Unview is going to be about today?
No, the Unview is going to be about many other things. Of course, Unview is about Matilda, the musical, coming to South Africa. We're going to chat about Macbeth at the Peter Turin. We're going to talk about Porrilicious, this phenomenal new comedy.
I saw a poster for Porrilicious, this woman with a hairy chest.
She's coming in, Sonia. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
But also, I'll play a bit of music from Lebanon. But it's also very spiritual Lebanon, by the way, I must tell you.
Yeah.
So we did the whole tour of the saints, and of course, Jesus walked in Lebanon at the Cedars. And,
hallelujah.
And it's really beautiful. It's a very special place. The food, I have put on so much weight.
Alan, food. You don't show it.
So
that's the Unview today.
That
between,
is so,
between
so
9 and
we
10.
We love you, Alan Ford.
It's good to be back, by the way. I love that Spring is here this week. Isn't it great?
I know.
You sprung into the studio this morning, so you are bringing this.
Look at 10.
Okay. And
those two are going to keep talking forever and ever, so I'm going to end the show right. Put your shirt back on. I've seen enough today. Oh, this is. See you tomorrow. Stop it, Alan. That's disgusting.
It's the 10.
Between you and the cussy tops, I mean, leave me alone.
CliffCentral.com.